Yes, this is Roseanne Ariel and Marlon House. We're interviewing Charlotte Cohen.
And I am Charlotte Cohen, and I live at 4601 Fifth Avenue.
You know the routine already.
Yeah, good. The point is that his responsibility, in large measure, was not developing low-cost housing, nor was it necessarily overviewing the minimizing or the doing away with slum housing. His responsibility was in large measure to improve the city and improve the tax base and develop good housing, attract businesses, attract industry, attract company headquarters. This is why, in effect, he was called the housing coordinator. But he had this broad responsibility. The man, however, proved to be one with a real interest in what, when we became friends, it became obvious that he was listening, you know. And at any rate, to get back, the changeover was done pretty smoothly, and Mr. King, Doug King, was in large measure responsible for the development, and he was working at that time with, if I remember correctly, Jim Cunningham from the University of Pittsburgh, and work on a board with her, and I'll think of her name in a minute. Shore, Gladys Shore.
Dr. Shore. You mean Barbara Shore?
Barbara Shore. Gladys. That's another.
That's all right.
It's Dr. Barbara Shore, right. And anyway, it was a fairly smooth transition, including a division, a breakdown for active work into subcommittees. And even as this was happening, and it was happening, as I said, in the early spring, we'd attended more than one or two meetings, Dorothy and I, which were in the late winter or early spring, or late 69 or early 70, is what I mean. When we were asked to join, wouldn't we come as a regular thing? Mm-hmm. And yes, we would come as a regular thing. We were excited. Mm-hmm. You know, here was a chance.
So you were the community element.
We were part of. Mm-hmm. Well, there were many others.
I see.
But we were there actually, under the aegis of the league, because we were reporting back, and we still do. I don't, because once I became chairman, and that happened awful fast, I didn't feel that I I could be representative of the league, since I was in policy position,
right.
And I certainly wasn't going to obligate the league to policy position that we took. However, Dorothy stayed with it, and both she and I reported back, and where we could, and we almost always could, we got this. The league to accept position, so it worked much better that way.
Yeah.
But once you become once you're in policy making decision, you really have the right to represent one group while you're making you're in.
When did you become chair? 6 months
after
you joined.
Really?
No kidding. Really?
It was 6 months.
Yeah. The point is that they had not, prior to becoming the Pittsburgh Advisory Committee, this had been the mayor's committee, so the mayor had designated. Now it was an independent group, still under the aegis of the city, still with the coordinator as the and we kept him that way. In fact, we kept him that way when we succeeded in getting a housing department. And that was quite deliberate. It certainly was deliberate on my part, and other people saw it the same way. because as long as you had somebody of that kind, from that position, as the chairman of your open meeting, you were in position of saying, I need, or we need, on our agenda, Mr. Y, Miss X, and please put a call in to HUD and ask them for Mr. Z. And it was done.
So he had access.
If you move them sideways, and ultimately that did happen, simply not through any action of my mind, certainly, but with changeovers, it only worked and continued to work through the years because by then, well, I personally had established the kind of relationships where I could pick up the phone and say, you know, this is Charlotte Cohen and I'm calling for the Pittsburgh Advisory. By now everybody knew the Pittsburgh Advisory. So it didn't matter that it wasn't, you know, David or then Paul Brophy, you know, calling, or Mary Raleigh, who succeeded Brophy. So that was, you know, quite deliberate. But back to the how this came about. The decision had been reached that subcommittee work would move this forward. By now, you had 235 and 236. These were both subsidized housing. One was, the 236 was rental. The 235 was ownership.
Are those housing
very
codes?
New. Those are housing programs, federal housing programs. Mm-hmm. And they came in 71.
One was rental, you said?
236 was rental. 235 was ownership.
Uh-huh.
And the ownership was with a 1% mortgage. And the rental was 20 to 25% of the income was what the rental was. Now, 236 was, except in certain instances, only a part of a rental building.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to use federal monies, you had to designate at least 20% of your units for low-cost housing.
Mm-hmm.
In some instances, 40%. But that brought your mortgage down to a 1% mortgage on your house.
Mm-hmm.
It was well worth your while. What was terribly wrong with that, and we saw it very quickly, and that was among the first presentations that I made to a variety of state, federal, everybody. They did a nice job of putting them up. They put absolutely not one penny in for maintenance.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
They figured they also figured the rents very close on the utilities as they were then, when
before inflation.
Before the oil crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1971, 72, even 73, they were pretty stable.
Mm-hmm.
And except for the fact that there was no maintenance, which was a
that.
Very serious problem, mm-hmm. one that we recognized within 2 years of that, if it took that long, and started agitating. But the utilities
mm-hmm.
were murder, absolute murder. This resulted, by the way, it took a number of years, but in 1975, well, it was, I believe Congress started talking about it in 74, and then by 75 we had community development block grants. I don't know if either one of you have ever heard of this, but you did, okay. And we had Section 8 housing.
Mm-hmm.
And here was the attempt to rescue, at least to a certain extent, the subsidized housing that came on the market. As far as the 235s were concerned, you see a fair number of those in East Liberty, for instance, little houses, individual houses, owned mm-hmm. by the people living in them. It was a marvelous program, truly a marvelous program. The problem with that, and that's something that we struggled with in the committee, mm-hmm. was that some of the people that were induced, I need to use that term, mm-hmm. To become homeowners were not ready for homeownership in the sense that they had been living, for instance, in authority housing, that is, public housing. And in public housing, if your spigot drips, you pick up the phone, or you, if you don't have a phone, you go to the office and you say, my spigot is dripping, mm-hmm. or my toilet is running. Right. Gets fixed. You move into a new house, and your kid jumps down your steps and busts something. There's no phone to pick up.
Right.
If you've got a bad toilet, you go to the builder, and you've got a year, okay. But if your kid swings on the chandelier and pulls the chandelier down, it's your business.
Mm-hmm.
You have to mow the lawn. You have to water the lawn. We had some real heartaches.
So these tenants weren't ready
for that?
They weren't
ready.
How were they?
Those were real. Well, it's a very exciting thing when you stop and think that we're talking about people who've had very little in their lives. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've had minimal jobs, maybe they didn't have minimal jobs. Maybe they were brought up, maybe a woman, a young woman, with a couple of kids, was brought up by a mother who was on relief, and she was on welfare. She's been living in the authority housing. And she's felt, I'd like something better.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly everybody's talking about, you can own a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody can own a house. You don't need to have a lot of money. All you have to do is you know, want one and demonstrate that you've been paying your rent. Maybe you've only been paying 20% of what you got. And that's a welfare check, but that's all right. You know, only 1% on your mortgage, and if you're careful about what you do, you can bring your kids up in their own home. It's very, very exciting. And of course they're induced, I suppose. I shouldn't have used induced in that sense, except that, you know, it's a lure. It's a kind of a, you fall into a trap.
Well, it was publicized, is what you're saying, and people heard about
it. Well, of course it was publicized.
It
was very, well, there wasn't any question, you know, 235, home ownership for the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can have the American dream. Of course it was publicized. It was very exciting. And look who was doing it, Republicans. You know, my lord. So that there were some real failures. By the same token, the housing was basically good, and it's there today, and it's a good community. I'm talking about the one in East Liberty, there are a number of them.
In general, do you think they fared well? What percentage of the houses do you think were a success from that?
I would say that we saw no more than 15% failure, and I think
mm-hmm.
that's tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really tremendous. 236 didn't fare that well. Not nearly that well. Simply because this represented, it really was subsidized housing. And the landlords were really not permitted to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them got into trouble, particularly because they had not one but several troubled families. And you put more than two or three troubled families, you even sometimes put two troubled families mm-hmm. in a given building.
Right.
And you have asked for all kinds of trouble with the whole building. So that some of this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
You also had people who paid their part, then didn't pay their part, then moved out at midnight, and took with them anything that they could pull off the walls, you know, this kind of thing. And without the maintenance.
What were some of the, where were some of those apartments?
Well, some of them were in East Hills.
Oh.
Some of them were in East Liberty itself.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were in the Hill. Some on the north side. Where else was 236, so there was some on the south side.
Let me ask you one question. Where
yeah, sure.
were you involved in all of this, while all of this was going on?
All right. as I said, I jumped.
You were the chair of this.
Well, the first thing that happened is we broke up into committees
mm-hmm.
that were to work during the month.
Mm-hmm.
The mother committee was set to meet once a month, the last Tuesday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
The subcommittees were to meet during the month and do the work that had been identified as needed doing mm-hmm. in the public meeting. I joined, the first committee that I joined was rehabilitation and code enforcement, naturally. This
mm-hmm.
was one of the things that I was all about. Well, I joined it, and I was asked to be convener.
Mm-hmm.
It was simply to call the first meeting. I called the first meeting, and guess what happened?
You got elected
chairman,
chair.
Huh?
So,
it's a common,
right.
common occurrence.
But that was a very exciting committee, because that was a committee made up of people from the county health department has a responsibility for housing certain codes.
Mm-hmm.
So there were people from the county housing health. There were people including the director of the Bureau of Building Inspection for the city of Pittsburgh, plus one of his particular inspectors. There was a major player from URA, that's the Urban Renewal. There were representatives from the legal department. There was a gentleman who lives in Enright Court, he still lives in Enright Court, who was a county coroner.
Mm.
He was at that point working for the coroner's office, but he's a county coroner now. You understand that this was colorblind, and
mm-hmm.
we all are colorblind. So that some of us represented ourselves, some of us represented groups, some of us represented home ownership, some of us represented small builders. At any rate, we got together and we started looking at the overall picture, and let me just tell you a few of the things that we did in that committee. We did succeed in working through developing a program for, remember I mentioned the emergency repair?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote it, we developed it, we were actually able to sell it to the administration. It still exists. Now, for a number of years, we monitored it so that it remained what we had originally meant it to be.
Mm-hmm.
The only change that we permitted, we had originally planned it so that it worked through the housing court, so it moved very fast. We couldn't hold on to that for a variety of reasons, so about 4 or 5 years after it was in place, we did give way on that, but only limited. But that still exists somewhat differently unfortunately, but it does exist and it is still helping. We found that there was no maintenance code. Mm-hmm. When you went to repair a building, you were held to new standards, new building standards, which was excessively expensive and excessively difficult to do and frequently resulted in substandard housing,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes it was so expensive to do what was demanded of a new building that you didn't do anything. So we wrote a great deal of difficulty, mm-hmm. long, long time in the doing of it. And I mentioned the kind of people that were on the committee for this particular reason. I think it took us 2.5 years, mm-hmm. or a little better, of writing and rewriting and rewriting and developing a maintenance code, which we got council to adopt, mm-hmm. as the maintenance code of the city of Pittsburgh. And it stood until the city went to the national code. Now, the national code was coming in after we had written ours. And we examined it as a possibility, because but we didn't like it because it had some things in it that we felt did not pertain or should not pertain to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to make our points to the people who really counted. And so they backed us, and it was our maintenance code until the other was modified.
That's great.
And the other, I have a very strong feeling, although I may be all wet, since it was Paul Imhoff who was our representative on the national board, which was relatively new at that point, I have the feeling that because we were working so hard on the maintenance code that he raised the question and they came up with a maintenance code, but they came up with things, as I said, that I personally objected to and the rest of the committee felt very strongly about. So that was one of the things we did. We began the agitation, which we are still involved in, for urban homesteading. Succeeded in getting an administrative decision on vacant property, mm-hmm. what to do with it and how long it can stay there. We succeeded in getting the department to create a file of responsible people for rental property, which exists very nicely to this day. And they began a file on ownership.
Mm-hmm.
What we never succeeded in doing, and it's one of the things that I feel badly about, is getting the city to do an inventory, a housing inventory. Believe it or not, there was no inventory. If there is today, it's escaped me.
Mm-hmm.
They depended in large measure on the county tax rolls,
mm-hmm.
which are not necessarily correct. You have taxes assigned to empty lots. You have no taxes assigned to existing buildings. You have all kinds of peculiar setups. So these are some of the things that we did in that committee. Along the way, people who came to the meetings. We had broken up into the rehab and code enforcement. We had a relocation. We had a housing authority overview. We had a legal and a legislative committee. Those were our standing committees. A lot of people were coming to the meetings at that time, and among the things that they brought to the forefront was the fact that there was a real problem in Glen Hazel. Glen Hazel had a community that had, was built around 1940-41 as the war began.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in large measure basically minimal standard housing to house people coming in to work in the mills. And you have to remember at that time incomes were very small. So these were really inexpensive housing. And some of it, or maybe all of it, was authority housing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the rentals are on the scale in terms of your incomes. Well, in the middle 60s, it became evident that something had to be done. They were pretty badly run down and they had to be renovated. And the city promised that this community, since it had grown so cohesively and so well, and that it was a very positive force in the city. It was mixed, and it was a comfortable place.
Mm-hmm.
And people wanted to stay there. The city promised that they would renew the housing. Now we're in the 70s. And all kinds of plans have been brought up, including a plan for private housing,
mm-hmm.
with some sweat equity. I don't want to go into that because it'd take forever if I tried to explain. But
right.
At any rate, this was, again, ownership, some rental, but all coming out of the housing authority, aegis. Some of these plans, when we first got into this bit, and it's how I became so prominent right away, quick, we ran smack into a stone wall, because federal monies were obviously being used,
mm-hmm.
and the unions, the building unions, were arguing that the Davis-Bacon Act applied, which meant that wherever you used federal monies, the prevailing union wage applied. Well, that was fine in high rises and in commercial buildings, but if you tried to apply the same wage level to a little house, the house became impossibly expensive. Now, private building, they didn't touch, because by and large in the city, private building meant at the most 10 houses.
Mm-hmm.
But public money was a different bit, because you were talking about a lot. So they were really, you know, they insisted that it stay Davis-Bacon. We were arguing not against the union,
mm-hmm.
but arguing that you could not, in all conscience, raise the cost of the housing so high that, number one, you simply prevented the moderate income from being able to have that house, and two, that the cost became prohibitive in a subsidized house, so that you reduced the numbers that you could build. Where you needed a great many, you had to cut back. Well, we argued that at great length, and we argued it far enough along so that there was a question of getting an administrative law judge here to hear the case. Well, now you have to remember that this was a very loosely formed and committee. We're unincorporated. We have we had a very loose structure. So now we needed a structure, and we needed a specific person to front, other than administrative,
mm-hmm.
and the administration. I mean, well, guess who?
The volunteer.
Really?
So that's how
citizen.
I became the name, but almost within a week or two, we did have a board, you see, which had not yet really formed itself, and that was made up of the chairman and vice chairman of the committees, the standing committees. Well, they very quickly met, and I became chairman.
That's how. Right. Where did you meet, by the way?
We met building? We met in the public safety building in the housing court, which is room 521. And you see, the magistrate of the housing court was part of us.
Mm-hmm.
His administrative assistant was a part of us, mm-hmm. So you see, it flowed.
How did the case come out?
We lost it here.
Mm-hmm.
We appealed. We won it.
On appeal.
On appeal in Washington. And we have, and it has, to the best of my knowledge, it has not been rescinded. We have established a special, considerably lower rate for unions on low-rise housing, which made a tremendous difference. Now a lot of time had gone by.